Okay, so we're on Daf Kuf Vav tonight. So I'll begin. We did this actually yesterday, but I'll begin a few lines from the top. Anyway, in yesterday's Gemara, the Gemara said that Rav Anan had referred a case to Rav Nachman, but he didn't tell him why he was referring the case. Rav Nachman assumed that he was his mishpacha, which was not the case. And as a result of that, he gave priority to the case, and the other Baal Din got, you know, for tzitzit, he got, you know, he wasn't able to respond. So on line four, the two dots in Kufa B'mad Aleph, 106a, page 211. Rav Anan have a regular Yehuda Ati Yigabe. Rav Anan, Eliyahu would come to visit him. And he says, the Havamani Le Seder Eliyahu. He would teach him Seder Eliyahu. So this is his work, Tana de Eliyahu. There's Tana de Eliyahu Rabba and Tana de Eliyahu Zuta. So that's what Eliyahu Hanabi would teach him. Even to Abin Hathi is Talik. But once he had made this referral, this case referral, which, you know, apparently wasn't so correct. We just discussed, Fern just came on, but it wasn't so correct because he didn't explain why he made the referral, is Talik. So Eliyahu cleared out of there and wasn't visiting him anymore. Yatu Betanita Ubay Rachme. So he, Rav Anan, he fasted and he was mivak and he was with Talel Ba'ata, and Eliyahu showed up to him. Yat Havamavi Blei Be'uti, he appeared to him in a different form than he had before. Now he appeared to him as a malach and scared him. Ba'aba Tevuta, so what Rav Anan did, he prepared a box. He says, V'yat Kameh, and he sat before him at the Apikle Sidra. In other words, he would sit in the box, and so he's like not, you know, directly, I guess, seeing Eliyahu Navi until he taught him the whole Seder. Behind the Amri, Seder Eliyahu Rabba, Seder Eliyahu Zita. And that's what they referred to, Seder Eliyahu Rabba. So it means, and Rashi says on the third white line on Kufab Ben Aleph, Shalaman Chutz the Teva. In other words, what he studied when he was outside the Teva, he taught him Seder Eliyahu Rabba. In other words, that was the bigger part. And Seder Eliyahu Zut Shlama B'Tocha Teva. When he was in the Teva, sounds almost like Noach, you know, but it's a different Teva. So when he was in the Teva, he taught him Seder Eliyahu Zuta. Anyway, there's a whole tumult in the Mefarshim about who, when we say Tana Eliyahu, what does that mean? So I'll make this short and we'll get through the daf, and if we have more time then maybe we could do it a little differently. So he quotes, there's basically, you know, the Be'er Sheva wants to say that when it says Tana of Eliyahu, it means that there was a Tana named Eliyahu who would have it. Like we mention this all the time. On Shabbat morning, we Ashkenazim say Tana Eliyahu, we say that every Shabbat. So what does Tana of Eliyahu mean? So it was taught, one way to say it was taught in the base of Eliyahu, so that he's a Tana. But on the other hand, the Chidab, you know, certainly disagrees with the Be'er Sheva on this, and he maintains that when it says Tanaz Eliyahu means from Eliyahu Hanavi, and indeed he uses this Gemara as like proof that it's clear in this way. Now, okay, all right, let me leave the rest of this out, and we'll maybe do a little bit more later on. Okay, let's go further in the Gemara one and Kufav Mem Aleph around line 10. Okay, so the Gemara says, "B'shnei Rav Rav Yosef of Ritcha." During the years of Rabbi Yosef, there was richa, the anger. It means like there was a, you know, no rain. And Hashem was angry at Paul Israel. Amri le Rabbanan Rabbi Yosef. So the Chum said to Rabbi Yosef, "Libay mar rachmi, we need you to be mispalo for us." So Amar Luhu, Hashta. So he said to them, he didn't want to pray for them. We'll talk about it in a minute why he didn't want to pray. But Amar Luhu, he said to them, Hashta Malisha, the Chiyav Rabbanan Mitzri Kamei, Abu Paishi Trey Alfin Amant Rabbanan. He says, with reference to Eliyahu Elisha, when the Chama would leave him, so there would still be 2,200 Chachamim would stay around with him. Well, the Gemara will explain shortly. There was a Gemara calculus. We had an incident yesterday that we referred to about Elisha. I'll come back. So with Elisha Hanavi, there were 2,200 Chachamim who would stay with him, and they would be supportive of him. They needed his food. Notwithstanding that, Bidan Ritcha, it was a time of anger, he wasn't mispalel for Klal Yisrael. Anai by Rachme, so I should be mispalel. So one question is, why not be mispalel? So the Oracle had three answers. One is, Answer A, he didn't think it was like serious enough.
Are you sure what we're talking about?
Both instances, they didn't think it was serious enough to be mispalo. Or answer B, that they had already gone through Seder Taniyot, like the Gemara learns when you don't have rain, so you go through a Seder Taniyot. They had already gone through the Seder Taniyot, and he felt that like if they'd gone through the Seder Taniyot, so that he should pray, you know, in addition to that, is like Pasach. It wouldn't help out. He says, this is from the Ion Yaakov. He knew that it's only a merit of the community as a whole. So if it hasn't worked up till now, it won't work. Or answer C has from Bnei Yoshua, he didn't think it was an opportune moment for tefillah. It was an Idan Ritva, a time for his anger from Kadosh Baruch Hu. So it wasn't a propitious time to pray. Either way, so he didn't pray. So now the Gemara clarifies what's this incident with Elisha. So the Gemara says, how do we know that there were 2,200 Talmidim left? When all the other Talmidim would clear out, so remember yesterday's Gemara, we quoted this part with the pasuk five lines from the bottom on Kofayim days. We mentioned that the Gemara was quoting this that when you bring a gift to a Talmid Chacham, it's like Bikurim, it's like first fruit, like to a Kohen. That's what the Gemara had a pasuk. So the Gemara quoted this pasuk. This was in yesterday's Gemara. Somebody came from Baal Shalisha and he brought the Ishal Kim to Elisha, Lechem Bikurim, like first breads. He says, Estrim Lechem Sorim, 20 loaves of barley bread, and with Carmel but Siklono, and barley in its husk. So the Gemara takes it that he brought 22 portions of food, because Lechem Bikurim is one, and 20 Lechem is 20 plus 21, and Carmel but Siklono is 22. So he brought portions of food for 22 people. That's the way we figure it. Now, back in the Gemara. So he says, so Elisha's servant said to him, how am I supposed to give this food before 100 people? So my lefnei me'a'ish, what does it mean before 100 people? If I say, how can I give food, which is enough for 22 people, in front of 100 people, in times of famine, that's not bad. That's pretty good. The Gemara figures. Ella the full chabachad kami mea ish. So the Gemara says it means ma etain zel if they mea ish. It means one pearl portion for 100. So in other words, he's got 22 portions, and the Gemara figures he's got 2,200 people there. So one portion. So each portion for 100 people. How can I do that? That's what he was saying. He says anyway. The point being, he had 2,200 people left with him. When everybody else would leave, they would, because they were being supported by him. They were his ongoing retinue. Then the Gemara brings other cases like this. You have a Miftri Rabbanan Be'Rav, when the Chamim would leave the base medrash of Rav, Abu Paishi Alpha Umat and Rabbanan. They would leave 1,200 of the Chamim there. Be'Bei Rav Huna, Abu Paishi Tzvani Me'a Rabbanan. From the house of Rav Huna, from the base medrash of Rav Huna, they would leave 800 Talmid. Rav Huna Habadarish, the place are Amoroi. Now, the Gemara mentions that Rav Huna, he had so many Talmidim, when he would give a drasha, he would have 13 Amoroi. Amoroi is like the Matur Gaman, that it was when a Chacham would speak, he had a Matur Gaman. The Matur Gaman would elaborate what he's saying, say it louder, and everybody hears. So he had so many people, he needed like 13 of these Amoroi. He says, Rav Huna, when the Chan would get up from the yeshiva, Rav Huna, they would dust off their garments. So much dust would be there, it would like cover the day. Everybody, in other words, everybody in the dusting off the clothes, so it's covered up. But Amri Bama Rava, they would say in Eretz Yisrael, come and leave me tip to Rav Huna, Bavlo. In other words, Rav Huna is in Bavel. So one webshot is in Eretz Yisrael, they see this big dust cloud. They say the yeshiva students got up from Rav Huna's yeshiva. Or it could mean an alternative shot. They would see like dust in Eretz Yisrael. They would say that's like it is when the Talmidim get up from Rav Huna's yeshiva. So that's another way. Okay, now let me do a few more lines and we'll pause and take questions, comments, and thoughts.
But only 800 stayed from all
the
people.
Right. So that's the one. Those are ones who stay. The other ones go up. In other words, these are on like the support. They need food. When the Chama would leave the base medrash of Rav and Rav Yosef, I will paishi arba Rabbanan. In other words, it keeps going down. It's a little bit like the Parsha of Shavua, like we know how long people live. Like it keeps going down, how long people live. So here, it keeps going down, how many people there. to Rav Reb Yosef, there would be 400 Chacham left. The Karulin of Shaihu, they call themselves, Rav and Rav Yosef, call themselves Yatmei, orphans. In other words, compared to the larger numbers of the early Chacham we have, we have nobody left. You have a Mifti Rabbanah Mibay Abaye, when the Chacham would take leave of the base bench of Abaye, Ba'amila Mibay Rav Papa, let's say Rav Papa, Ba'amila Mibay Rav Ashi, let's say the base bench Rav Ashi, Habu Paishi Ma'atan Rabbanah, leave only 200 Chacham. It was going down. He says, "Vikaru nafshayu." They called them. They referred to themselves as Yatmei Yatmei, orphans of the orphans. In other words, the earlier chachamim, like we started off with Rav Huna. You know, Rav had 1,200 talmidim left, and now we're down to with
200.
Yeah, with Rav Ashi. It's going down. All right. Who's the question that comes to us on anything so far? Everybody good? Okay.
So Elisha didn't think tefillah would help.
So we had three explanations. Well, he thought it was Idan Richa. Idan Richa, you know, is not a propitious time to pray, like the Idan Richa. I think the more person we done at Richa elsewhere as well. But anyway, so all right, so I'm gonna go on unless anybody has questions. Okay, now all right, let's go further. So Amr Yitzchak Radifa Amr Bami Mevakri Mumin Shbush. Now we mentioned earlier, this is on the daf that we did yesterday, that the Gozer Gzeiro in Yerushalayim would take money from the Truma Salishka. Remember we had this in the Gemara earlier. They would get paid from the Truma Salishka. Truma Salishka are the Machzir Shekel that people would give to for the Korban Tzibur, and they would pay the Truma Salishka. So presumably from the Motar Truma, the leftover from Truma Salishka, presumably. So Amr Yitzchak Bar Radifa Amr Bami Mevakri Mumin Yerushalayim. The people who inspect the animals for Mumin for blemishes, you remember the Gemara learns they would check with the Korban Tami, they would check it 4 days ahead of time. But any Korban had to be inspected for Mumin. So he says, Hayunokun Scharim Truman Lishka. They would get paid from Truman Lishka. Amr Yitzchak Shmuel, Taminichamim Lam Mihilchot Shchit Lutonim, Nokun Scharim Truman Lishka. Taminichamim would teach Hilchot Shchit, the laws of Shchit, the Kohanim would get their Sakhar from Truma Salishka. He says, Amr of Gil Marav, Tamid Chamim Malam Mihilchot Kmit Lakonim, built in Sakhar of Truma Salishka. So Rabil says, and Rav, Tamid Chamim would teach Hilchot Kmit. We know Hilchot Kmit is one of the most difficult things in the base of Mikdash, right? With the Kohen, when he takes his hand, his fist, he sticks it into the flour, and then he leaves like three fingerfuls of the. Right, Kmitza. So it's interesting. In each case, it says they're teaching them Hilchot Kmitza. Doesn't say actually shchita. Doesn't say actually kmitza. It's in the halachot of shchita, the halachot of kmitza. So he says, "Amar Rabbi Bar Bar Chanan Yochran, Magiyei Sfarim Shushalayim." The people who would correct the Sfarim in Yerushalayim, it means like the Sefer Torah. And he says, but it's not just in the base of Mikdash. You know, the Sfarim in Shushalayim. And Rashi points out, where's Rashi? Rashi is higher than where we are. It's around the 10th hour line upstairs. So Magiyei Sfarim shall call Adam Yadam. In other words, it would be correcting Sfarim that each person had in their house. You're not allowed to leave a sefer that's not corrected. Don't let iniquity reside in your tent. So the people weren't not so careful about this. So they designated money from Truma Salishka to pay people to correct the Sfarim. I'm back in the Gemara, 10 lines from the bottom, from where it gets wide. Amr Abdachman Amarav, the Shimcha Orgo, the Parochot, the women who would weave the curtains in the base of Mikdash, not lo scharim the Truma Salishka. They would get their payment from Truma Salishka, Vanil Meir Mikachi Berekabayat. I'd say from Mikachi Berekabayat. Mikachi Berekabayat are contributions for the upkeep of the base of Mikdash, upkeep of the structure of the base of Mikdash, and Truma Salishka is the Korban Tzibur. And then other things also, which we'll come to see, we've seen a couple of other things around up there. So they had the Truma Salishka paying the people to teach the Kohanim. And presumably that's from the leftover Truma Salishka. The Truma Salishka is the main thing for the Korban Tzibur. But then they have money left over afterwards. So he says, Bani Omer, so that was Rav Nachman, so the name of Rav Truma Salishka for the Paro Chol. Bani Omer, I, Rav Nachman, say, you touch a bit of Kabayit. I say it's from the Kachi Bet HaKabayit. Again, both Rav and Rav Nachman are living long after the Korban Mikdash, they're both living in the 3rd century, and the Beis Mikdash is destroyed in the 1st century. So I say it was from the Kachi Bet HaKabayit, from the Kachi Bet HaKabayit, Ho Parofo Tacha Binyan Asuyot. since the parochot, they're part of the structure, they're in place of the structure, which we'll see shortly. So Meifei, so we ask Kasha now against Rav Nachman from the following braisa.
He said Bet HaKabai.
So he said Bet HaKabai. Bet HaKabai means to upkeep the structure. So Meifei, we ask, the braisa says, Nashim Orgo Parochot, and women who weave the parochot, the curtains, who beit darmu amasalechem panim. If you remember the Gemara in Masechet Yoma, we learned this in Daf Yomi, there was a family that would be in charge of the lechem panim that was beit garmu. So beit garmu, and they preserved their secret ingredients and their way to prepare the lechem panim. He says, beit garmu amasalechem panim. Beit garmu was paid from the beit aptinas amasalechem panim. Beit aptinas, they were the ones who compounded the ktoret. They all got paid from Trumas Lishka. So here, Rav Nachman said it was from the Bari Kabayin. Here, the Bryce says, Mefuresh, that the women are getting paid from Trumas Lishka. So it's not looking good for Rav Nachman. So the Gemara resolves it. Hatam b'dibave, that when Rav Nachman was referring, b'dibave means that when the Bryce says they get paid from the Trumas Lishka, it's talking about the curtains that would be on the entranceways. And there was a different curtain that we'll see in the base of Mikdash. So there are curtains that would be on the entranceways to the base of Mikdash. Those would be from the Truma Lishka. But he's also right about the Bedek Bayit. There are curtains. The curtains would, there used to be a wall in the first base of Mikdash between the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kedashim. And then in the second base of Mikdash, the dimensions were different and they couldn't make the walls. So they had two curtains there. Those curtains were instead of the wall. Those curtains between the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kedashim, that was from the Bedek Abayit. The other ones were from the Shumas Lishka. So let's see back in the Gemara. So Hatam B'Dababe, over there it's talking about the gates. Da'amar Rabbi Zerah Marav, Rabbi Zisna Rav, Shosah Parachot Yibu Mikdash Shein. There were 13 curtains in the second base of Mikdash.
Can I just say Arthur's trying to get on?
Hey, 1 second. I don't see him here. I don't know if he's getting...
I told him to try again, and I would interrupt you.
Yeah.
You don't see him?
He may be trying the wrong, I don't know if he's got the right link or whatever. He's not showing up on my screen. All right? If I see him, okay. I'll let him in, but I don't see him here yet. Okay? Let me do two more lines. Focus now. Okay. All right. The first one I line downstairs. Okay. So Shastra Parachori B'Mikdash, there were 13 Parachori B'Mikdash Sheni. Shiva Keneged Shiva Sharim, 7 in each of the 7 entries ways. Echad the Pitcho Shel Heichal, 1 the entrance way to the Heichal. He says, Echad the Pitcho Shel Ulam. And 1 for the Ulam here he got it. Okay, I let him in. Okay? Echad the Pitcho Shel Ulam. The Ulam is like this vestibule. He says, now, so Pitcho Shel Heichal is the entranceway to the Kodesh. And Pitcho Shel Ulam is this antechamber which leads into the Kodesh.
So those two were the Bedek Abayit.
Those are part of the Trumas Lishka. So everything up to now, so we had 7 entrances into the Mikdash. Then we have the Heichal, then we have the Ulam. It's 9. So those 9 were from the Trumas Lishka. But then Shnayim B'Devir, now he says 2 in the Devir, 2 between the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kedashim, and Shnayim Kenegen Baliyah. There was an upper story where they also had 2 curtains, also corresponding to the, so those four from the Bedek Abayit. The rest were from the Trumas Lishka. So, Elu Elu, so in other words, everything's coming out correct. Okay, and welcome our emotion, nice to have you. Now, anybody have any questions, comments, or thoughts on anything we did so far?
What did you say was the answer to the issue that we thought the Kmitza was very difficult, but they were dealing with the Hilchot Kmitza that were very difficult?
Yeah, so I didn't really answer, but I said thought it was interesting that the Gemara says they were paying Tamid HaChachamim to teach them Hilchot Kmitza. Maybe the Kmitza themselves they might have learned from their brother Kohanim. But the halachos of the Kmitza, the same thing with Shechita, they probably learned from their brother Koni. But, you know, like there's a difference between knowing, like we had in Chulin, like there's a difference between being a mumcha and being a muchsak. In other words, a mumcha, you're, you know, all the book learning, and muchsak, you know how to do the Shechita. So that could be with someone. Okay, now let me do a little piece from one of the sheets and we'll take it from there. The Gemara on Kufav, this is from Rabbi Zev Dickstein, the Al-Hadar. says that the Torah scholars who taught the Kohen the laws of Shechit and Kmitza received salary from Trumas Lishka, funds of the temple treasury. Also, the Gemara on Kofei relates that there were judges in the city of Yerushalayim, the Dayanei Gzeirot, or Dayanei Gzeilot. He says the city of Yerushalayim, whose wages were paid from Trumas Lishka. Tosfos and Kofei and the Choros Chaptet asked why it was permitted for these scholars to accept a wage. The Gemara in the Choros and Adarim derives from a Pasuk. It's forbidden for a Torah scholar to accept monetary compensation for rendering halakhic judgments teaching Torah. Mani b'chinam afatem b'chinam. Just like I'm free, you, in other words, Hashem is saying, Mani b'chinam afatem b'chinam. I teach for free, you teach for free as well. Tosfos' answer is that the money the judges received wasn't considered wages for their services, but rather a stipend to support them. Since they dedicated all their time to public service, and were unable to provide a livelihood for themselves, it was the obligation of the public to support them. The Taz quotes this Tosfos to justify the custom of rabbis who were paid salaries from the community, since this is their only means of support. The Ramah cites the Abarbanel, who offers another reason to justify paying wages to a rabbi. He explains that it is customary to support our rabbis to enhance the prestige of the rabbinate. If rabbis would be forced to occupy themselves with business to support themselves, their position and honor would be belittled, and their congregants wouldn't properly respect them. The Ramah concludes, however, that if a rabbi is able to support himself and refrain from taking a salary from the community, it is commendable and is considered an act of piety. So the Ramah says, ideally, you should have your own parnasa rabbi, but not the community should support you. The Marshal disagrees and contends that a Torah teacher, although capable of supporting himself, should not do so. He explains that earning a living would inevitably lessen the amount of time available for teaching Torah, and it would be sinful for a rabbi to spend his time earning a livelihood rather than teaching Torah. Marshal says you can't do both. In other words, if you're going to be working, you're not going to be studying Torah. Your Torah is going to suffer. For Moshe Feinstein rules that it is customary to rely on the opinion of those who permit a rabbi to accept a salary, and he argues that it isn't even considered an act of piety for Torah scholars to refrain from accepting a salary stipend. In other words, he says not to do like the way the Ramah is saying. Furthermore, says Ramosha, in present time, a rabbi who contends that he's capable of achieving excellence in Torah while simultaneously supporting himself by engaging in business is merely deluding himself. He classifies such an attitude as a scheme of the Yetzer Hara and says that such a person will ultimately forget the little knowledge of Torah which he manages to acquire. He says that a Torah scholar should be encouraged to utilize all his time for Torah study, even if he must resort to accepting communal support. All right, so then you hear it from the supporting. Okay, any questions, comments, thoughts on anything we did so far? All right, let's go further. Now, we're three lines in the bottom on Kufavim Beis, Amar Aleph. Okay, so Tan Rabbanan, we learn the Braisa, Nashim Megala B'nei and Lakara, you may remember this, we've had this before in Daf Yomi. Women who raise their children to Lapara means they're going to transport the water for the Para Duma, which we'll explain shortly. They would get a Sakhar from the Trumas Lishka. So Rashi goes through, maybe we'll read the Rashi in one minute. If you remember, the Gemara learns that there was a special Kumra they would do with the Para Duma. It was a leniency they did with the Para Duma and a stringency with the Para Duma. If you remember, it's the first Sugya in Mesechus Yoma, right? So the beginning of Sex Yoma, the Gemara discusses it over there. The between the Prushim and Stukim. So the Prushim said that the Kohen who handles the Paraduma can even be the Mu'rav Shemesh, the Tful Yom. Tful Yom is when somebody was Tamei, and remember that's the first Mishnah in Sechet Brachot, right when we finished there. So then he's gone to the mikveh and he's waiting for nightfall to have full tara. So he's just got like a little taint of tuma on him when he's tibul yom. So the Prushim said that a murab shemesh is allowed to prepare do all the avoda with the paraduma. The Stukim said absolutely not. So in order lo seemingly banshel Stukim, in order to like demonstrate that the Stukim are wrong, so they would make the Kohen who prepared the paraduma tamei, and then he became murab shemesh, and then he prepared the paraduma, and that was to show that the Stukim are wrong and whether this is the way we're doing it. But to counterbalance that, so people shouldn't be lax with the paraduma, there's stringencies with the preparation of paraduma that weren't necessarily required, but they did it this way. So one of the stringencies they had was that the individuals who were going to be children who handled the water preparation of paraduma had to be people who were never tamei mate in their whole lives. Even with the paraduma, it's the who becomes tamei. He says is it
by sprinkling?
I'm sure I remember. It's the one who sprinkles it becomes tummy, right? I don't know if the one who transports the water becomes tummy. Anyway, so they would transport the water for the Paraduma. So they were raised in special communities, and they were raised on, like, the cottages where they were built. They were built on, like, bedrock, where they're unlikely that there's any dead bodies underneath them. In addition to which, like, the cottages were raised at least a tefach off the ground, so that even Lo Yatsur, there'd be a dead body underneath it, the tumah wouldn't be bokeh and go up. So they would raise there, and they never left that place. And then they would, till age 6 or 7, and then they would help prepare the paraduma. So the Gemara says, so these are children from birth that were never exposed to tumas mitz. So the Gemara says, feelings to the bottom. The Tanarban, Nashim Vagal Benayim, the para, the women who were raising their children to help handle the paraduma, you know, looks karam bitumanishka. They would get their wages from the tumas lishka. Abishul Omer, Nashim Yikarsh Bushlaim, Yuzanaro, Tanar Parnasobatan. Abishul says, that wealthy women in Yerushalayim would, like, sustain them with zanotam and with farnasotam. So zanot means they give them food, and with farnasot, Rashi says, with a bush of ksud, with
clothing
and like mattresses and covering that way. All right, let me just do the one Rashi about Megala B'nai Lepara, and then we'll go on to the next topic, which is going to be carried through to the end of today's daf. Okay? So 10 lines on the bottom, and Rashi 15 lines on the bottom. And Megala B'nai Lepara, so, there were like chatera courtyards that were built on rocks in Yerushalayim, and then underneath there was like a space as they went through, and then kever hatahom. So the concern is kever hatahom. Kever hatahom is maybe somebody's buried, nobody knows about it. That's a second para. Women who were pregnant with town, the Yodot Sham, and they would give birth there. And then they would raise their children there. He says, to be osake in the burning of the paraduma and the water and transporting the water, and do the hazah. Yes, so they would become tame then. But even then, that's not a tumas. This stringency they did, which children would never become tameh, because they, on the other hand, they had like a little, not so careful, but intentionally, they would have a coin who was a tvul yom parent. He says, like we learn, they would be intentionally tameh the coin who would be burning the para duma, and then be tovel him, they, in other words, I didn't say, but the Stukim said it had to be somebody who already knife bullet already happened. The Murav Shemesh means the knife already happened. But the Krushim said it could be a Tvul Yom. That's the way it goes. All right. So, all right. Any questions, comments, thoughts on anything we did so far? All right. Let's go on.
Leniency was for the guy who was going to.
The Kohen who's going to prepare the para doom. He's going to shech the para and he's going to, like, you know, throw it into the fire and everything else. So those,
but these kids were just transporting the water.
They would transport the water, and it says also, he says in the Rashi, la asok b'sfrei pato. So it could be they might have been turning over the flesh in the fire, something like that. And he says also ula hazok kol shiva, and they would pour the water on the kohen who had been involved with the sfrei pato. All right. Now let's get back on the Gemara. So the bottom line on Kuf Vav Amud Aleph. Okay. So by the name Rav Huna Mei Rav. So Rav Huna posts Haran Pesh to Rav, turn the page, top line on the Kufam days. Klei Sharit Mavshi Yasumi Katri Bera Kabayit. Now, the Klei Sharit are Kalim that are used in the Avod on the base of Mikdash, like you say, service vessels. Can I take it from the Katri Bera Kabayit? If I wanted, which fund does it come from?
Right.
Buy it, construct it. From Katri Bera Kabayit. Do I say Tzorach Mizbech Nenu, Mikatri Bera Kabayit Atu? Do I say it's the Tzarche Mizbech? Mizbech means the Adam Mizbech. The Adam Mizbech was not a movable Mizbech. It's attached to the ground. And this is a Sorech for that Mizbech. So it's the same halakha from Bedek Abayit. Oh, it's Tzarech Korban. Or do I view it as the Tzarech for the Korban? He says, Mitruman Lishka, you will sin atan. And then it came from the Trumas Lishka. So again, so this is Rav Huna asking Rav. So what the Klei Sharet are the Klei Sharet from the kachei berek habayit or from the truma solishka? That's the question.
Do you use these kli shayit for other stuff besides the mizbeach outside?
No.
Only for the mizbeach outside.
Well, in other words, like let's say you have a mazleg, like the pitchfork, they're going to handle the meat with it.
It's only for the mizbeach outside.
Yes, it's only for the animals. So that would be down the outside mizbeach. Yeah, we'll talk about that mizbeach shortly. Okay. So anyway, so the question is it from kachei berek habayit because it's sorach mizbeach, or from the truma salishka? And again, from the truma salishka means from the leftovers of truma salishka. Again, the truma salishka means everybody gives a machzor shekel, and then you withdrawn for the korban tzibur. But then at the end of the year, it's leftover money. So he says, so amarlei, so Rav said to him, einasin elo mitruma salishka. This is from the truma salishka. So efe. So then Rav Huna asked him the following question. Now, this is from Pasuk and Divrei Yamim, but it relates to an incident which is mentioned in Malachim, which is more than a quote as well, and this is from the Haftorah for Parshat Shkalim. If you remember, this has been Sheva Shanim Yehoash Malko. He was 7 years when he took over, Yehoash, king of Yehuda. So he had this mother, Atalia, who was like, was a mother or grandmother? She was like a terror, and she was like murdering everybody because she wanted, she was the daughter of Achab and Izebel. And she wanted to take over and rule the whole place. So anyway, this Yehoash was you know hidden, and then he was raised under the influence of Yehoyada Kohen, and he was a firm fellow. So he says so it says in the Navi that he collected money and then he renovated the Beis Hamikdash. We'll see in a minute. So Efe uKechalotam, this is in Divrei Yamim, which is in Ketuvim. Efe uKechalotam lehaviu lefnei haMelech. When they concluded, they brought the leftover kesef. I asked Kalim the Beit Hashem Klei Shari Begomer. They made the kesef Klei Shari. So the Makshin Rav Huna assumes the pasuk is talking about Berek Habayit. We assume the money was collected for Berek Habayit, and the money is being used for Klei Shari. That's what it says. So that's a kasha. You say it comes from Truma Salishka. Here I have from the Berek Habayit and making Klei. It's not Mefurish, and the Gemara is going to have a different shot later on. He assumes that it is Berek Habayit. So the Gemara says, Amarlei, so Rav says to Rav Huna, the Akriach, Tuve lo Akriach, Nevi'im, the one who taught you the Pesukim in Tuvim, because didn't she see the Pesukim in Nevi'im? He says, the Pasuk in Navi says, Ach lo yeseh beit Hashem sipor begomer, it says the money can't be used for the different Kalim, they give it for the workers in the Beis Mikdash who are going to renovate the Beis Mikdash. So the Gemara says, Yihachi Kashuk Prayadari. So then I have a stira between the Pesukim. One Pasuk says they're using the money for the Kalim, one says they're not using the money for the Kalim. So the Gemara says, look, Kashuk, there's no contradiction between the Pesukim. Kanshikabu Tiru. The first Pasuk is talking, they gathered money and there was money left over. So that money that was left over from the Berek Habayit, they could use the Kalim, we think. Kanshikabu Tiru. The second Pasuk is talking, they gathered money, there was no money left over.
Obviously, there's no money left over. You can't use anything to buy.
Well, it depends what's included with Berek Habayit. In other words, that would be the key. In other words, Rav says that
they all say it has to be leftover money.
No, wait. Let's go slowly. So the question is from Truma Salishka Berek Habayit? Yeah. So with the Berek Habayit, it's not mukhrach that it has to be from leftover from the Berek Habayit. In other words, again, the Kalim we thought were an extension of the Beis Hamikdash, so it's not necessarily leftover anyway. But that's what he wants to say. He says kanchka below tiru. So what? So this is a little bit like sort of maybe what you're touching on. Let's say they collected the money and left it over. So what? They left it over, but the people gave the money, they better come buy it. So what are they using for the Kalim? So I'm Rabbi Bau says, the Bezin means that they make a tie, they make a stipulation in Hutzrichu. If we need the money for the better come buy it, we're going to use it for that. Otherwise, it's going to Klei Shari. Okay, so let's go slowly with this. So Rav says that the money, the Klei Shari, comes from Truma Salishka, and Rav Huna thought to argue that it should be from the Berek Habayit, but the Gemara says only if there's leftover money. We'll see in a minute. Now, the Gemara says, Tanit be Rabbi Shmuel. Now, again, Rav Huna, he assumed that the Pesukim were talking about money that was collected for the Berek Habayit. So Tanit be Rabbi Shmuel, Bryce was taught in the basement of Rabbi Shmuel, Klei Shari buying me Truma Salishka. So here, this Bryce is Mefurash on all fours with Rav. Rav says it comes from Truma Salishka, and the Bryce says it comes from Truma Salishka. Shinamar, and now he's quoting the pasuk. This pasuk is in the same as the first pasuk we had on line 5. Shinamar et shaar hakesef, that they brought shaar hakesef. Shaar hakesef normally would be the remainder from the kesef, but the Gemara darshens it differently. Ezu kesef sheso shirayim. Shaar kesef is not the remainder of the kesef. Shar Kesef is a type of Kesef that has Shirayim leftovers with it. Rabbi Omer is a Truma Salishka. In other words, when the Pasuk says they brought Shar Kesef, they're bringing money not from the Bedek Abayit, they're bringing money from Truma Salishka. So initially, Rav Huna thought the Pasuk is talking about the Bedek Abayit money, and he got into this whole problem. But the Gemara ends up saying it's really Truma Salishka money. So the Gemara says, Ve'imish Shirayim Kufayu. Why do I say it means the leftover money is itself? Why is Shar Kesef like the genre of money? Maybe it's the leftover money. It says, to the Amar Rabba, like Rabba says, Ha'ola, Ola Rishona. It says, you know, he Ha'ola, that this is like the Ola you're going to bring. And so Ola Rishona, so the Gemara learns it's the Ola is the first korban that's brought in the base of Mikdash, but it's the first Ola that's mentioned in Parshas Pinchas. So he says, Ha'kanami, Ha'kesef, Kesef Rishon. So when it says HaKesef, they brought HaKesef, he says on line 6, it's Sha'ar HaKesef, it means the first money that was withdrawn from the base of Mikdash. So it's not the remainder from it, but it's saying the type of Kesef that does have a remainder, and that's the Trumas Halishka. Anyway, let's just summarize again what we learned. Okay, wait, we're going to go over it. So again, the question is, the Kalim for the Adar Mizbeach, the Klei Share, are they from the Trumas Halishka, or are they from the Bedek Abayit? So Rav says it's Truma Salishka. So Rav Huna adduced Sukim, which he claimed, we're talking about the Kachay Bedek Abayit, and he said that one says that you could, you know, make Kalim from it. So the Gemara initially answered that it's, if it's leftover money from Bedek Abayit, so then you could use it for the Klei Shari. But then the Gemara quotes a Braisa from the Sefer Rabbi Shmuel. It said that that first Pasuk is not talking about Kachay Bedek Abayit, it's talking about the Truma Salishka. And when it says it's Sha'ar HaKesef, it means the type of kesef that has a remainder, which is true Truma Salishka. That's what he's saying. Okay, now, okay, so that's the way it's going. Now, Meifei.
And don't prove either way.
Well, we do have a Braisa on all fours with Rav. And Rav Huna, we don't have a Braisa. But we'll see the other way now. We'll see, it'll come out to be a three-way machloket. So Meifei, now we ask Pasha against Rav on the following Braisa. This is Meifei. HaKetoret, the whole Korbanot Tzibur, so far, so good. The Ketoret and all the communal sacrifices come from the Truma Salishka. So far, so good. Mizbach HaZahav U'Levona U'Klei Shari Bayin Yimotar Nesachin. Now, not going so simple.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it says...
Third opinion.
Now, Mizbach HaZahav, now, remember, that's the Mizbeach you were referring to. The inner Mizbeach, Mizbeach HaPanimi, also Mizbach HaKetoret, Mizbach HaZahav, all three the same. That's a movable, that's not considered part of the Bayit, it's movable. That's a movable, a small movable Mizbeach. So the upkeep of the Mizbach Zahav, Ulavona, the bra takes out the word Lavona. But if you have the word Lavona, it would mean Lavona with Lechem Apanim, but it's somewhat questionable. He says, but the key for us is the Klei Share come from Motar Nesachim. Now, what does it mean, Motar Nesachim? So there's a long Rashi on this. Let me say it outside first, then we'll do it inside. So Rashi explains the prison of Machloket, the Gemara Mesechem Nacho, what Motar Nesachim means. It doesn't have anything, it doesn't mean wine, that's how much. He says, the first part, he says, is when people would sell flour to the base of Mikdash, so the vendor would give them enough so that the keli would be like heaped up on top.
Oh.
And then the kohanim would level it off. So the extra flour that they would get would be the motar and the sachim, and that money they would use, according to this pshat, for the klei share. Or the other pshat that the Gemara has is if somebody would contract with the base of Mikdash to supply flour at a certain price, and then the price fluctuated, either went up or down, the base of Mikdash would always get the lower amount. So if let's say, he contracted to supply flour at $1 a pound, and now the flour went down to, you know, half a dollar a pound, so they get twice as much flour, so the extra flour that they're, you know, got, they're erecting, that would be the Motar Nesachim. That was called Motar Nesachim, because talking about the Minchat Nesachim, you remember Minchat Nesachim, with the Korbanot, you'd bring wine libation, but you'd also bring Menachot with them. So that's why it's called Motar Nesachim. Anyway, but the key thing is that this Braisa says, the Klisharet, it's a third opinion. It's not coming from the Bedek Abayit. It's not coming from the Truma Salishka. It's coming from the Motar Nesachim. So now it's getting, like, the plot thickens. Okay, now, Mizbach HaOlah, now the Mishnah says, Mizbach HaOlah, the outer Mizbech, which we know is attached to the whole structure, of the shkot, and there was the upkeep for the chambers in the base of Mikdash, the ha'azarot, and there was the courtyards and the chambers, or the chambers of the courtyards, buying the kachay bedek abayit. Chutz l'chomad ha'azarah, outside the wall of the courtyard, by Mishare Halishka, from leftover from the Trumas Halishka. Zui Shishaninu, this is still part of the Brisa. This is what we learn. Choman Ha'ir Umiglotaha, the wall of the city and its towers, the Kulzarach Ha'ir, all the needs of the city, by Mishare Halishka. Anyway, the point being though, the main line in this Brisa that interests us is that the Mishare come from the Motar Nesachim. So now, we could see right away, we have three opinions ready. We know that Rav and the Tanna Rabbi Shmuel said it comes from Trumas Halishka. And then this Brisa says it comes from the Motar Nesachim. And we know Rav Huna was proponent of the idea, but Rav Huna is an Amara. So the Gemara says Tanaihi. It's Matloka Tanaihi, which is what you would have guessed from Gekko. Tanaihi. Ditnan, we learned the Mishnah, we had a Simsech Shkalim for Dakyomi people. It says Ditnan, we learned the Mishnah. Motar Truma, Mayu Osinba. Now the Motar Truma is the like the leftover from the Truma Salishka. What would they do with it? In other words, they would have like a golden, you know, covering for the Beit Kodesh Kadoshim. They would use it for that. Rabbi Shmuel over there.
We gave so many things they would do with it.
Right. Okay. So there are a lot of different things they would do.
One of them.
Right. Rabbi Shmuel over there. Rabbi Shmuel says, Motar Peirot, the Ketzam is Be'ach. Now, the Motar Peirot, we're going to see what Motar Peirot is shortly, but it's going to mean that, well, we don't know this yet, but it's going to be like the Beis HaMikdash is selling items to the people who bring Korban out, and they're making a profit on it. So that's, this is payroll, doesn't mean like fruit. It means motor payroll, like I'm selling flour and nesachim, and I'm making a profit from it. I'm being a vendor to the people who need the korbano, so I'll make a profit on that. I'll use that profit. Like Ketzam Mizbeach. Ketzam Mizbeach is the dessert from Mizbeach. During downtime, they'll bring, with that money, they'll bring korbano. Motar truma l'klei shari. So this is what we need. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, the motar of truma is l'klei shari. That's like Rav, and that's like Tanna Rabbi Shmuel. The motor and truma salishka, and here it says Bakura says the motor, the excess from it, goes to Kli Shari. That's exactly like Rav and like Tanna Debei Rabbi Shmuel. That's Rabbi Shmuel now. So we had two opinions so far. Now, Rabbi Akiva Omer, motor truma, the case of Zbeya. Rabbi Akiva says the leftover from the truma salishka goes to the case of Zbeya. Motor Nisachim, the Kli Shari. Rabbi Akiva says the motor from Nisachim goes for Kli Shari, and the motor Nisachim we discussed, that was the either like the flour that was too much over, or the profit they made from, like when the price went down. Okay, so let's go slowly. All right. So we have two opinions here so far in this price. We have Rishmael says it's the motor truma for klishari. Kiva says it's the motor nesachim for klishari. Reb Chanina skanakoni momer motor nesachim for kesem zbeach. So the motor nesachim goes for kesem zbeach. Motor truma for klishari. This is motor truma for klishari. Yeah, looks like it. Now, v'zevzeh l'umodim b'peirot. Now, the last two opinions, i.e., Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Kinnitzkan Akonim, did not agree with peirot. He didn't agree. Neither one of them agreed that with the leftover money that they would make a profit from the goods that they would sell to people and use that profits for the either for the we said before for the Ketzam Zbeah. He says peirot mahi. So, what are the peirot? So he says, "Tani, we learn the brisa, motar truma mayu osinba. What would they do with the motar truma left over from the truma salishka? Lochim peirot bazol. They buy peirot bazol. So with peirot bazol, is actually what it says peirot bazol. But it means, let me see. One second. Well, we'll see in a minute. He says it means that they would buy, let's say, like wine and flour for the people who need to bring korbano, umokrin otam biyoker. So they buy it cheaply and sell it expensively. This is v'has safar v'kitzim b'odom zbeach. And then with the profit, they would use it for the kitzim zbeach. V'zuhi shaninu motor peirot l'kitzim zbeach. So that's the motor peirot. So my v'zev is eloi yimodim peirot. What does it mean in the last two opinions, i.e. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Chanina didn't agree with motor peirot? It's done, because we learned the Mishnah Masechet Shkalim. Motar shiari lishka. What would they do with the leftover from the Shari Lishka? Lochin Bahen Yenot Shman and Mislatot. They would buy wine, oil, and flour. Baha Sachar, Hektesh, did Rabbi Shmuel. The profit would go to Hektesh, according to Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Akiva Omer, this is Rabbi Akiva we had in the earlier Mishnah. This is Rabbi Akiva Omer, a Mistakma Mishal Hektesh. So Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Kanin is going to agree on this. Rabbi Akiva says they wouldn't make a profit over Hektesh. And they wouldn't make a profit over money collected for aniyim. Why would they not make a profit for the goods that they're selling for hekdesh, like for the wine and the other things? It means it's like chintzy. In other words, like Beis HaMikdash is a very opulent place. And now you're selling, like, now I'm selling, I'm making a little money on you. It's like, you know, it's like, you know, like, sure. It's right. It's like, right. This is the Beis HaMikdash. So he said, we wouldn't do it that way. Why don't we take money collectively in Niyam and invest it? I would think that I'd be afraid to lose the money. Like, I'm going to take the money, invest it on the stock market, you know, and then it crashes. But he says, why don't I take the money from the Niyam and invest it and then get more on it? He says, because maybe an Ani will show up, you know, the money to give to the Ani. So they wouldn't do that. That's an Agabor.
What money was this? This is money for Aniyam?
No, this is the first time we mentioned the Aniyam. It's a different matter. He's saying that if he's saying two alachot that we don't make money on off the money. So in other words,
this money was designated for Aniyam,
right? So that we had a fundraiser for the Aniyam. So why don't we take the fundraiser, take the money, we'll invest it in a business, and then we're afraid the Ani's going to show up. We don't have any money to give him. Wow. So we need disposable money. Okay, now. So again, the only thing is, we never saw an opinion that supported Rav Huna that said it was from the Kabbalah. That we didn't see. Okay, now let me just do a little bit, and then it'll be it for today, and then we'll take some questions, comments, and thoughts. And then we'll have our discussion about the scene, which is coming up this Wednesday. Okay? All right. More people?
And
Rachamani,
so it's not
alphabetical. All right, I don't know. Let's take a look. All right, let's listen to the story, and then that will be it for today. Now, the Beis Avraham Zatzal was once asked why arrogance is the worst spiritual blemish. He responded, when one transgresses a different sin, the more one learns in a sense spiritually, the more one feels the need to repent, since sin is an innate contradiction reaching higher spiritual levels. Arrogance is different because it feeds on one's achievements. So the more one learns, davens, and does mitzvot, the bigger one feels. This means that one is not more likely to tshuva at all. On the contrary, one will most likely feel even more worthy of honor and esteem. Since the only release from the trap of Torah and mitzvot adding to one's swollen head is to stop thinking about oneself. Instead, one should make an effort to learn and daven for its own sake. The Kutzker Rebbe Zatzal was a chassid of the famous Yehudi of Peshitzka before he ascended to greatness in his own right. He was most often in Peshitzka, but would periodically make short visits to his home in Tamashov. During one such visit, he entered the Beis Medrash and heard a young scholar by the name of Tzvi Hirsch learning the Gemara in Ksubas Kupav, which states that when the students got up after the lecture of Rav Huna, the dust from their coats would cover up the light of day. The Kutzker approached the young man and asked, "What does that mean? Could they really have covered the light of the sun with the dust of their rising?" The young man thought a moment and said, "I don't know what it really means. Do you?" "It means," so the Kutzker said, "it means they were shocked and dismayed by the amount of spiritual dirt which could accumulate and cling to the rabbinical robe of the students. There is only one way to cleanse this filth, by learning Torah Lishma." So he wants to say, like, the dust represents like the arrogance, the averot they have. Okay, now let me end the recording. Have a discussion. One second. Let me end the recording.